Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to the Hour of the Time with your host here, Doyle Shamley, in Eager, Arizona. Tonight, January 2010. And first, the contact information. If you'd like to write the Hour of the Time, you may do so by writing Hour of the Time, P.O. Box 940, Eager, spelled E-A-G-A-R, Arizona, 85925. Again, that's Hour of the Time, P.O. Box 940, Eager, Arizona, 85925. The website, hourofthetime.com. That's hourofthetime.com. And in Eager, the studio number, 928-333-2942. That's 928-333-2942. And in Canada, the studio, 613-733-4324. That's 613-733-4324. Now, if you'd like to email me with information, questions, hate mail, whatever, it is hourofthetime@hotmail.com. That's hourofthetime@hotmail.com. And I want to say that the audience is getting better about the phone messages. I've only gotten two new UFO and alien abduction reports in the last week. So thank you very much. Send those elsewhere, please. But that's a decrease. So thank you. And the emails even on those topics have decreased in the last two or three weeks, with this last week being significantly lower than previously. So thank you again there. Now, ladies and gentlemen, don't forget we are listener supported, and you can lend your support to the Hour of the Time so that we can expand our base of operations. We have offers from networks to go on satellite. That includes the small dishes every night of the week if we want. Shortwave, of course, is always open to us, and other networks around the country and world. But we're not going to do it by Rob and I hawking ourselves into the poorhouse to run and pay for it. You need to support your causes. And that's where our hot shop comes in. Hourofthetime.com, and then go to the hot shop. And there you can see MP3s on an individual basis with just a small minimal order, because it would be almost pointless to send a disc and packaging and everything in the mail to you with one MP3 on it. MP3 sets on that are topical on various topics: the Lost Light series, survival, Minuteman, tactics, psyops, Mystery Babylon, numerous series, also the DVD presentations. Now, ladies and gentlemen, also, we're always open to feedback from the audience as well on topics to cover on the air. We'd like to be responsive to your needs as long as it's not too redundant, too repetitive, because we do have a vast library of prior achievements, and there's no reason to keep covering the same information over and over. Preaching to the choir is the point it'll get to. But if there's a topic you don't quite understand and feel that it would be a good topic for the rest of the audience, let me know. Email me at hourofthetime@hotmail.com. And don't forget the Pennsylvania Conference in April 2010. The link is on the front page of the website, hourofthetime.com, to go there and see the details, the schedule, etc. And don't forget that we're on a drive for some new equipment, ladies and gentlemen, and that's where your support really comes in helpful. It's necessary equipment to expand our operation. We have guests lining up and lining up, and we won't be able to take all the multiple audience call-ins during live broadcast, plus the guest, plus us, all at the same time during a live broadcast, unless we have some newer equipment. It's just, most of it is just plain worn out, ladies and gentlemen. So think about that. And as always, have something to write with during the broadcast. And I always try to give you a musical break at the beginning to go get something to eat, drink, and settle in for the rest of the duration of the hour of our broadcast here at the Hour of the Time. Now, tonight's topic is within the 2010 firearm series, if you will, but it's definitely a standalone topic. It's an extension, part of a series, from last week's broadcast on long-term ammunition storage and general caching. We're going to continue that series in its entirety, all taken from U.S. military manuals, Special Warfare School of the U.S. Military and Department of Defense, guerrilla warfare manuals produced and practiced and perfected by the U.S. military on caching techniques. So, this could be really handy if you lived in an area that was real volatile for earthquakes, floods, what have you. How to have supplies if you've got to vacate your neighborhood that you can get to and they'll be fresh and usable when you get there and you find them, not somebody else. It could also be used, of course, in your practice and your training with other individuals in your area where you form within your church groups, your community groups, co-workers, as an emergency stash of supplies and equipment and necessary items for the threat or an attack of terrorists, both foreign and domestic, like millions of us took an oath to protect and defend the U.S. Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic. So, if that were to occur, you could have a reconnoiter point where you could meet up and have supplies ready for you. So think about that, ladies and gentlemen. After this musical break, be prepared to write and take detailed notes. Ladies and gentlemen, this evening we're going to be using music contributed by musicians from the audience of the Hour of the Time. Thank you, Max, for this one in Ultra Space.
Thank you.
ladies and gentlemen. Your host here, Doyle Shamley, in Eager, Arizona, with the Hour of the Time. The website, hourofthetime.com. My personal email address, hourofthetime@hotmail.com. The studio in Eager, 928-333-2942. And the studio in Canada, 613-733-4324. Now, ladies and gentlemen, again, the caching techniques are something that everybody should know. We went over general caching guidelines at the conference 2009, and in 2010, you're going to see hands-on how to do it. You're going to do it. And you're going to see cache supplies that are months and months old pulled up so that you can see how well it still is doing condition-wise, usability, etc. Now, again, this started on what was ran, let me think here, Friday the 15th, actually, on long-term ammunition storage, a broadcast. Then we got into general caching techniques, so it definitely go hand-in-hand with tonight and the rest of the series. Now, people might ask, what is caching? What is caching? Well, caching is simply the process of hiding equipment or materials in a secure storage place with the view to future recovery for operational use. So what does that all mean? Well, it means, ladies and gentlemen, you stash something, you put something you might need later on that you don't want to or can't carry on your person right now, at some maybe other point than your normal area of operations, as in your home, backyard, go to work, go to the store and back home, maybe outside that realm, and you want to use it and you want to find it usable. Medical, communications, weapons, food, clothing. Then the ultimate success, of course, really depends upon attention to detail. Okay, and it may seem unnecessary to the untrained eye, but attention to detail really is the nuts and bolts of it, ladies and gentlemen. Security factors cover for the caching party, for instance, when you embed it wherever you hide it. Is everybody watching you? It ain't going to do much good, is it? Because if you're suddenly hit with a terrorist attack for enemies foreign and domestic, or any flood or tornadoes or hurricanes come through and you're headed off to reconnoiter point A or Bravo or Zulu, what have you, with other family members or neighborhood or church members or militia members, and you get there and it's gone because everybody else saw you bury it, a bunch of food and medical there, it was useless, wasn't it? Sterility of the items cached. And removal of even the slightest trace of the whole operation in and of itself. These are all vital factors. Now, of course, the technical factors are highly important as well. The preservation of the items in usable conditions, the recording of data, essential for recovery. Careful adherence, ladies and gentlemen, to these basic principles of what could be called clandestine operations, if you will, as well as familiarity with the technicalities of caching will ensure success, or at least put the odds in your favor. So what is caching operations? Let's cover that. You could call this in your notes. I hope you're taking notes. I'll even lay them out for you because I have it all written. You could call it Section 1, Caching Operations. Now, these considerations that are so vital to the success of your caching operation can be done in a variety of situations. Cash supplies could meet, for instance, the needs of personnel who may be barred from their normal supply source by sudden developments, or who may need travel documents, extra funds for a quick escape. Cashing can also ensure the ability to overcome supply problems for long-term operations conducted far from your secure base or normal area of operations, AO, ladies and gentlemen. Cashing could also be used for anticipated needs in a terrorist-type strike situation in areas likely to be overran or struck or abused by an enemy, or a natural disaster. Maybe you know that your normal routine, besides all the information we gave you, like in the survival series, tactics, Minuteman, etc., for basic gear and equipment items you should have in your vehicle and in your home, but maybe because of your work and your travel, your duties to your churches, what have you, you know already that you live in an area prone to floods, earthquakes, tornadoes, fires, etc. And you might have to vacate that area quickly and not be in one of your normal areas of operation. So, in a sense, you, even in a natural disaster, could be overran by a calamity, a catastrophe, and have to move on to a different point. Reconnoiter Point Zulu, for instance. And there, you could have larger supplies that aren't feasible for you to have on your body on a day-to-day basis. So it applies to many facets, ladies and gentlemen. Planning for an operation. You have to obviously select items to be cached, have those items on hand, not just a pipe dream, and select a site. When you're selecting the items, ladies and gentlemen, you have to try to do your best to have a very close estimate of what will be needed by your particular group, your family, what have you, your church, for the particular circumstance. Do you know that every year you get vacated from your area due to some weather? Then, and it usually lasts for a week, or some forest fire that always sweeps through, or you're always getting earthquakes and services are down. And you know that there are only three neighbors that give a hoot about anything and are in on this with you, and you are your by yourself, let's say. So there's four of you to plan for, generally for a week, and generally about 50 miles away. Procurement really isn't a problem. There's ways around that. We've taught you that over and over again. See the survival series, tactics, the Minuteman, etc. In fact, procurement, the ease of it, before, just like preparations, ladies and gentlemen, the emergency arises, is the biggest thing in favor of caching. When selecting a site as a planner, you should always ensure that your site is not only accessible for emplacement, but also for recovery. So, you're in your natural disaster zone. There's four of you. Every year you might have to move out for about a week, and it's a big pain in the butt. If your disaster is flooding every year, don't put your cache in a what is right now a dry river bottom or wash, because it'll probably be full of the very thing, water, that's chasing you out anyway. Now, there are seven basic items, according to the John F. Kennedy Special Warfare Center, to consider in your caching. One, purpose and contents of the cache. Two, anticipated enemy actions. Three, activities of the local population. Okay, write all these down, ladies and gentlemen. We'll go back and cover each topic. Activities of the local population was number three. Four, intended actions by allied forces, friendlies, neighbors, church members, what have you. Five, packaging and transportation. Six, personal assets. And seven, caching methods. Now, ladies and gentlemen, those are the seven categories that need to be considered in an operation. Okay? In your planning, seven basic factors we just covered. Purpose and contents of the cache. Two, anticipated enemy action. Three, activities of the local population. Four, intended actions by allied forces, friendlies, neighbors. Five, packaging and transportation. Six, personal assets. Seven, caching methods. That is in your planning phase, ladies and gentlemen. So next we're going to go here to a musical break. Make sure you're ready to take lots of notes because I've got sections, subsections, and items for you to write down.
Nutritionists say that breakfast is one of the most important meals of the day. It helps to pick us up and gets us on our way. If there's a kingdom coming, it's part of God's plan, where the Word of God is all we need to feed men. No more bacon, no more panties, no more oranges, no more coffee, no more biscuits, no more strawberry jam, no more grits, no more scrambled eggs. One of these mornings, God's gonna call me home. I won't eat no breakfast when I'm gone. I'll be gone, I'll be gone. God's gonna call me home, I'll be reborn. No more Captain Crunch, no more cinnamon toast, no more Lucky Charms, no more Cheerios, no more Wheaties, no more Frost Flakes, no more Rice Krispies, no Nutter Breaks. One of these mornings, God's gonna call me home. I won't eat no breakfast, I'll be gone, God's gonna call me home. I'll be reborn.
Ladies and gentlemen, your host here, Doyle Shamley in Eager, Arizona, January 2010, with the hour of the time. Part two in our series on caching techniques, all taken from U.S. military manuals, reports, etc. Now, part one of the planning was purpose and contents of the caching, or the cache itself. You must determine the purpose and contents of each cache because these basic factors influence the location as well as the method of hiding. For instance, small barter items could be cached at any accessible and secure site because they could be concealed easily on your person once recovered. For instance, a few little 10th-ounce gold coins and some junk silver. Maybe right next door to where you live. Maybe in some public flower bed out by your apartment complex that sees very little use. Underneath a water fountain, what have you. Something you can easily get to and stick in your pocket and keep going. A backup radio. But it could be difficult, ladies and gentlemen, to, for instance, conceal rifles for a guerrilla band once recovered. That means, ladies and gentlemen, this site would have to be in an isolated area where your band, your group of what will now be termed guerrilla warfare fighters in this situation, defending our country against attacks from terrorists, foreign and domestic, need to be in a spot when you recover that cash that you can have at least temporary control and security over that area. Now, certain items like medical, they have a limited shelf life. Maybe some of your foods, MREs, for instance, and they require periodic rotation or some special storage consideration. And in that case, the items would necessitate easy access to service them for the intended user to maintain them, inventory them, inspect them. You're going to have to make a compromise, ladies and gentlemen, planning this out, the purpose and contents, between objectives and actual possibilities when selecting a cache site. But security is always the overriding consideration. Now, in planning, you have 2.2, anticipated enemy action. Is your enemy the weather? And the flood always comes down a given basin or an alley that the tornadoes always come from a certain direction, or an area that always gets screwed up when earthquakes hit because of weak infrastructure, supplying water, natural gas, electricity, what have you. Ice storms, is there a certain area that is always hit bad and the power lines go down? You have to consider the capabilities of all of these factors and the intelligence, ladies and gentlemen, and security services not participating in your particular operation. Now, this, of course, would be from people, bad people, lazy scum suckers who want to sit back and just find your stuff and not do anything and leech off of it when they need it. You have to consider the potential hazards of the enemy and its unwitting or unwitting accomplices. Other people from your neighborhood, your region, your town. Now, if you're doing this caching for a wartime type operation, the ultimate success will largely depend on whether you as a planner anticipate the various obstacles facing you during recovery, which the enemy will do, as in create obstacles and their accomplices, all the scumbags that want to run around and loot and knock in television store front windows during evacuations, etc. All those things are factors to consider. What are the possibilities, ladies and gentlemen, that an enemy force, scumbags in your area, domestic or foreign terrorist, will preempt an ideal site for one reason or another and deny access to it? For instance, your site that you chose happens to have very important freeway networks around it. Are they going to want control of that instantly, denying you a way into your cache? A vacant field surrounded by brush may seem ideal for a particular cache because it is near several highways. But, ladies and gentlemen, if it is a domestic or foreign terrorist enemy, and they take over that highway network for their logistical use, they might just turn that field into a base camp of their own. You have to assess the security needs and all the potential obstacles, ladies and gentlemen. Now, probably actually under three activities of local populace, probably one of the most dangerous things than deliberate enemy action, that is, are the chance circumstances, which could result in the discovery of your cash. Construction of new buildings. They may recover the cash site or impede access to it permanently. That field down the street that's seemingly just full of blown around trash forever, and that sign that says commercial property for sale that to you seems like it's been there forever, might be closing right now amongst commercial realtors. And in 3 months, it might be a paid parking lot. So-called bad luck can't be anticipated, but it can be avoided by careful and imaginative observation of the prospective cache site and the people who live near the site. If the cache is intended for a wartime or terrorist strike time use, then you need to try to project how were the locals around your cache site react to the pressures of war, conquest, famine, terror, etc. Because, ladies and gentlemen, under such situations, it is historically proven that then your humdrum, ho-hum local neighbor or whole town, suddenly caching becomes quite the thing, quite intriguing. And they'll more than likely resort to caching personal funds, valuables seized, etc. And if it becomes more and more popular, your cache site can suddenly receive more than normal attention from others, more pressure, if you will. Now, what are intended actions of people around you, friendlies, neighbors, other church members that didn't want to get really real well prepared with you? But there are risks. Using one cache site for several operations obviously involves the risk of mutual compromise. Therefore, as a planner, you might have to rule out what would otherwise be totally suitable caching sites if they've been selected for other purposes, such as drop areas, safe houses. A site should not be located, obviously, where it might be destroyed or rendered inaccessible by bombing, for instance, attack, some other military operation, a natural disaster, should the area become occupied. Installations likely to be objects of special protective efforts by the enemy, ladies and gentlemen, are almost certain to be inaccessible to the ordinary citizen. Therefore, if your cache is intended for a worst-case scenario, an attack upon our country, you should avoid areas such as key bridges, railroad intersections, power plants, munition factories, you get the hint. Part 5, packaging and transportation. You need to assess the security needs and all the potential obstacles and hazards around a prospective cache site and what they can present. You also have to consider what is it going to take to package and transport the cash to its site? Best results are done now when you aren't under an emergency situation where they can be packaged in a clean, safe packaging center, if you will, whether that be your workshop, garage, driveway, kitchen, church, I don't care. So, can the cash goods then be transported from your packaging center or your home to the cash site securely and soon enough to meet or exceed all the different schedules? Is your flood right around the corner that happens every year to you, or the ice storm that every year knocks out power and causes you to leave your neighborhood for a week? Is it right around the corner? Will you meet the deadline? If not, then you may have to move all your packaging operation to somewhere closer to the cash site. In that case, the cash site may then become more limited to safe house possibilities, safe buildings you can work within, safe areas around and closer to the cash site that you can utilize right now, ladies and gentlemen. Those are all things. Personal assets, number 6. Obviously, anybody who participates directly in emplacement will know where it's located. So, only the fewest possible and the absolute most reliable person should be used, ladies and gentlemen, in your caching. Okay? Because the more people that know about it, it's a square. It's a function of a square. The number of people that know about it, who is probably going to find out, ultimately. So the fewer people that know and are involved in it, the better. Now you must consider the distance from your residence, for instance, to the prospective cache site. And what type of cover you need for the trip, what actions are required. Sometimes just simply because all the factors we've covered so far, transportation, et cetera, security, other people's looking at the site, a flood zone, a tornado alley, may limit it to the distance within a small area around your residence. And these considerations, ladies and gentlemen, also apply to the recovery personnel. For instance, it may be appropriate to tell two other people, you started with two, and you may tell two other people, well, don't worry, we got everything over there. Everything we need for the four of us is at Reconnoiter Zulu. You two just get there. So now, four people know about the recovery, only two emplaced it and know about the inventory. That's an example of that. Now, 7, I told you, was methods. It's hard to lay down any general rule for caching, because each situation, what you're caching, where you're having to cache it, affects the whole operation and planning. But you should always think, ladies and gentlemen, as the planner, as the person becoming prepared, the suitability, terms of suitability, that is what you have to think in. The method most suitable for each cache, considering its specific purpose, the actual situation in the particular locality, and the changes that may occur due to the circumstances that you're trying to override and use that cache during, how they might affect your place. Now, ladies and gentlemen, after this break, because you've taken lots of sections, we're on part 7 of planning. Now we're going to go into concealment after this next musical break. And that second, folks, was Nuts of Grapes by the esteemed Woodsy and the Cambridge Astrophysics Lab Melodic Acoustic Nylon Guitar Symphony. Now this next one is by Desperado. Ladies and gentlemen, your host here, Doyle Shamley in Eager, Arizona, with the Hour of the Time, January 2010, with part two in our series on caching. Now, ladies and gentlemen, you can see from the music donated and sent in by members of the Hour of the Time audience, we have a whole variety of backgrounds, and that's what makes us special. The one thing that makes us unique is that we can think on our own. We don't need to follow like robots and sheeple, which most of the talk show hosts out there require. It's a basic operational premise of their broadcast because they are so mundane and really aren't teaching you and helping you with the tools you need to better the situation. We are solution-oriented, ladies and gentlemen, and that's what makes us, just like our audience, our viewership, our readership, our listenership, unique, is that we can think on our own, and each of us contribute our portion and our part to help out in restoration, ladies and gentlemen. Not Ron Paul revolution preached by the socialist. Revolution, revolution. Restoration, ladies and gentlemen, is what we need. An hour of the time is the tool to provide that. Now in concealment will more than likely require the use of permanent man-made, obviously, man-made or natural features to hide or disguise the cash. And guess what? It has, these things, several advantages. Both employment and recovery usually can be done with minimal, time and labor. Cached items concealed within a building, for instance, or a dry cave, can be protected from the elements. Now, don't pick a building, ladies and gentlemen, that's abandoned and may be slated for destruction or lies right on top of a fault or in a flood zone or is right next door to a big, huge parking lot with petroleum tanks stored on it full and water and electricity that some bad people, terrorists, may want to take over immediately when they start operating in your area. Those were all covered already, ladies and gentlemen. Just stressing that, okay? Now, because of these factors, though, that man-made and natural protection and structures make the concealment easier and the recover, and you save on time and labor because they can be protected from the elements, they also require less elaborate packaging. And in some cases, the concealed cash can be readily inspected from time to time to ensure that it is still usable. For instance, you might set up a schedule of every 6 months inspecting for water damage, pests, bugs, mice, rodents, what have you, movement, digging around the area, what have you. Now, of course, there is always the chance of accidental discovery, in addition to all the other hazards during a wartime situation that may result in the discovery or destruction of your concealed stash or denying of access to the site. Therefore, the concealment method, which is most suitable, is a site that is exceptionally secure, is available to you, and fulfills the needs of quick access. And it would justify, ladies and gentlemen, all those factors, a slight sacrifice in the security. Concealment can range from securing small gold coins under a tile in the floor to walling up artillery in caves. Ladies and gentlemen, it's taken right from a document of the U.S. Army's John F. Kennedy Special Warfare Center. That example of gold coins. Burial. Adequate burial sites can be found almost anywhere, ladies and gentlemen. And once in place, a properly buried cache is generally the best way of achieving lasting security. In contrast to concealment, however, burial in the ground is a laborious and time-consuming method of caching, and there are some disadvantages. The disadvantages are it almost always requires a high-quality container or special wrapping to protect the cache from moisture, chemicals, bacteria, etc. Emplacement or recovery, the second disadvantage of a buried cache, usually takes so long that the operation has to be done after dark, unless the site is exceptionally secluded. And a third disadvantage is it is especially difficult to identify and locate a buried cache. Now, as an aside, ladies and gentlemen, real quick, I'm going to tell you another real-life example, like in the ammunition storage I told you about. A gentleman had used, in a valley in California, very prominent beautiful, huge, ancient oak trees that really stood out amongst a hillside leading into a valley and draw as markers. And he listened to me only partially. I told him to find permanent type natural items that could be used. And by using the methods of azimuth and back azimuth to triangulate your position, which we taught at the conference and we'll be covering in more detail at the next conference here in 2010, how to get down to within 3 feet of where you buried something using a standard old compass. Because GPS is categorically not to be involved, ladies and gentlemen. That's another story, though. Anyway, this gentleman, who I know of personally, he only listened to part of my advice. He forgot the rest of the caveat, and that was don't pick something that can just as easily be destroyed. Now, living next to this forest and by these dry valleys that then led into draws, etc., through the oak groves, it was a common brush fire area every year. Small brush fires, etc. Quick sweeping grass range fires. Well, there was a bad one. And between wind and other factors, logistics were impossible for the firefighters, and most of the trees were burnt down. Now, of course, he went to go check on his cache afterwards, and guess what? His prominent markers in the oak grove that were other oak trees now weren't so prominent. He never did find that. And it was some nice stuff, ladies and gentlemen. At least after 3 years, I know he never found it. He may have by now. But he was using the principles of security and concealment and observation on onlookers as his overriding concern. So I know that he was going to go to the next step, which did risk some security, but go out with metal detectors and find it, if possible, because he used techniques to even hamper that. And GPS, while we're on that topic. Think about this. The SyncGARS radio system basically debuted in the late 80s by all the typical radio and communication manufacturers that are contracted with the U.S. government for the military. I went to these schools to go back and instruct my battalion and companies within that battalion use security and operations of the SyncGARS single-channel ground-to-air radio system. Now, they had frequency hopping technology and locator beacons and isolation capabilities within the SyncGARS radio system that relied upon these satellites in the sky, which are all owned by the government, mind you, for location, GPS. Now, ladies and gentlemen, the radio would sync, anywhere on average. It could sync with more, but on average, 4 to 7 satellites tell the precise location of that radio unit, etc. And it was all part of security and operations. And guess what else? All these civilians, everything from suits and ties to lab coats to just casual wear, depending on their level of bean countedness, and I know that's not a word, so don't email me, that were in teaching the courses to us to then go back and train the bulk of the troops, told us and showed us categorically how the GPS system is arranged. And the GPS system is arranged in such a manner that there is a shift and offset in all civilian units. It is not exactly accurate to the normalized satellite system and can be turned off and shifted again with the flick of a switch, per se. So, you locate something today with a GPS, and then you need to go find it a year from now, and bad things have happened because of terrorists, let's say foreign and domestic. and the flick of the switch occurred. Your unit may be reading 150 yards off at 239 degrees now from where it was reading when you cast your goods, and you won't know the offset and distance and direction. And that is if you had batteries on hand and they weren't dead and you didn't get it wet because it's a horrible storm you're traveling in and it freaked out on you, your device, in the weather and decided to quit working. Or it didn't get blasted with an EMP pulse. Or the LCD screen didn't burn out because you left it on your dashboard all the time and the sun burned out the LCD crystals coming through your windshield onto the screen. If you overcame all that and a really bad thing occurs to this country, it still is not going to work the same as it did when you first cast during a safe, if you will, time. So forget about GPS, ladies and gentlemen. How do you think all the geocaching and trail networks and paths of ingress and egress all work in those data banks, ladies and gentlemen? It's because it records all your points in and out and the point and stores it for you to recover later. And if you can store it and recover it later, so can bad people. So there's my little spiel on GPS and using just trees for locator markers. Now back to burial, etc., and containers. Submersion, of course, is its own little category. Submersion sites that all might be suitable for secure concealment are few and far between. The container, for instance, as a submerged cache, has to meet high standards for waterproofing, the resistance to external pressures, and it almost throws away the use of filled expedients. Expedients, not expedients. In the container. To ensure that a submerged cache remains dry and in place, you must determine not only the depth of the water, but the type of bottom, the currents, and other factors that are relatively difficult for a non-specialist to figure and obtain. Emplacement likewise requires a high degree of skill. At least two persons are required for both emplacement and requires additional equipment. So in light, ladies and gentlemen, of all these difficulties, especially the difficulty of a submerged item recovery, this method is only suitable on rare occasions. And the most noteworthy usage is the relatively rare maritime resupply, where it is impossible to deliver supplies directly to a reception committee. Caching supplies offshore by submersion in these instances is often preferable to sending a landing party onshore and then burying a cache or recovering it. And we will cover in more detail even submersion, ladies and gentlemen, by the bulk and weight of the container, how much weight you need to counteract that to submerge it, etc. This being part two this evening, January 2010, in our series on caching, ladies and gentlemen, here at the Hour of the Time, the website, hourofthetime.com, the studio number, 928-333-2942, and my personal email address, hourofthetime@hotmail.com.
Praise the Lord, we're all between perdition and the deep.